It's Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, three preseason games in the NFL kicking off here at Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. I've dubbed it the biggest game in the history of the NFL in the preseason. Of course it is. Shedeur Sanders is playing. It's crazy. It's crazy some of the stuff that's being said.
Back to what you said earlier with Dylan Gabriel being injured and not really knowing what Kenny Pickett. I mean, the odds are in his favor that he is going to be on this roster, right? And be the backup, at least? Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say. I don't know what the injury is for Gabriel and for Pickett. But I can tell you this. All the people who are worried about him getting screwed because he didn't get the right kind of practice that they expect, and they have no idea what they're talking about with football practices. But all those people are missing the story here, and it is he's going to get a lot of time tonight. And it may be against ones on the other side, mostly twos, threes, and fours. Freaking light it up.
Yeah.
I don't think that the preseason, I don't think most staffs are going to put a ton of stock into preseason games, but if it's on the positive side, he's going to open some eyes. And there also is the possibility that, and I haven't really read that he's been bad in practice. I listened to Joe Thomas, former Browns lineman, with Cowherd over on our sister station, Fox Sports Radio here in Vegas. And he said Shedeur has been better than Gabriel. Throwing the ball, he's been better. He's looked more, he's been smoother. He said where Shedeur struggles and Gabriel's better than him right now is the procedural stuff. Even as simple as just getting the snap, but also organizing the offense. That stuff, Shedeur needs more work. But there is a notion out there oftentimes. It's not a notion. We see oftentimes, or sometimes, players may not be great in practice. And when the lights go on, they're actually better in the live situation. And maybe he's one of those guys. We could get a good example here.
He definitely seems like one of those guys, which is good and bad, right? Probably hurt his stock because it kind of comes down to not really listening and taking everything in practice. But you have so much talent, and then you can just turn it on. But, you know, trying to get the fundamentals and all that.
Detroit, Atlanta tonight, Cleveland, Carolina. Half an hour after that, Washington and New England. So we'll be keeping an eye on the Shedeur start here.
We should
in
see
Carolina.
Bryce Young as well, right? I believe Carolina's playing their starters,
you know,
at least for some.
Sorry to cut you off. The three-game preseason kind of changes things with you're seeing a lot more coaches. I mean, the Chiefs have already kind of – they've already been the outlier, the best organization in football, and they're like, yeah, we're giving our guys time. It's not going to be a ton of time for Pat Mahomes, but, man, the guys play.
Yeah.
So that's the way we operate. It hasn't cost us yet, so that's the way it's going to go.
Well, what about the Bengals? They refused for years and then started so slow since Joe Burrow's been there, that era. So they were even playing yesterday.
Brilliant point. And I hadn't even connected that the Bengals have gotten off to crappy starts in multiple years. And finally, their coaching staff's like, hey, how about we get prepped a little earlier?
Yeah.
It's listen, I understand there's a risk of getting some of your big guys injured. But you also, you don't want to treat game one of the regular season as a fourth preseason game and not be up to speed. So there's a middle ground to work here.
I thought it was really interesting. I heard somebody who covers the Lions, and he said that there's like a 99.9% chance that you won't see any of the starters, like any. And that's just how Dan Campbell's always operated. And he treats the joint practices more like preseason and likes to have all of his starters there, right? Because it's more controlled environment. So
that's it.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what you hear. The joint practices, it's not as, you know, wild card-ish. And I would say in the joint practices, that's where you, because the point that the Shedeur side, and there really is a side, and I liken it to the Caitlin Clark side. If you think about it, the mania around the protection of both Shedeur Sanders and Caitlin Clark is very similar. Because you hear a lot of takes where you're like, have you ever watched basketball before? Do you know anything about women's basketball? What are you talking about? with Caitlin Clark. Because early on last year, you'd have the Caitlin Clark stands. We're like, what's with all these fouls and all this rough play? It's basketball. It's basketball. And it's a rookie getting the treatment around the league. That's the way it works. And with Shredder Sanders, I hear a lot of the same stuff. I'm like, do you not understand that the third and fourth team quarterbacks, they play in the preseason? And, yeah, it ain't easy, but they play. No one's setting anyone up to fail. Cut the crap. But if you really follow it, look at the Caitlin Clark stands and look at the Shedeur Sanders stands.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is a lot of the Shedeur Sanders backers are veteran media people who are, like, they're so emotionally vested in this thing. Like, to me, it is a weird story that he slipped that much. But these things happen, and they certainly happen with quarterbacks. There's been, I don't know if it's every year, but there's been some legendary situations where a quarterback was mocked. And this is why mock drafts, you got to be really careful.
Yeah.
They've been mocked to go in the top 20 in the draft, and then you see them stuck at the draft or a green room or at home looking like hell is frozen over. It is the worst day of their lives. Listen, Geno Smith, it's now worked out. He sat there forever. And I know people can't remember, but I do because he wound up going to the Jets. But Geno Smith was projected as a first-round pick, and they kept going to the picture of him, the video, and like, oh, my God. Aaron Rodgers was in the discussion to be the number one pick. If my memory is still working, I think he slipped to 26. And, I remember I was a kid. But, as a Jets fan, I remember watching in 1983, Dan Marino, arm talent-wise, was as good as anyone in that draft. And it was quarterback after quarterback after quarterback went in front of him. The Jets took Ken O'Brien, who was good for about 3 years. And then the Jets had to play Dan Marino, who, again, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, I think went 28th. But Dan Marino was that guy. We were like, what is going on with him?
Right.
Brady Quinn suffered from that. This is normal in the history of football. And now, the fact that he went in the, what did he wind up going, in the fifth round, Sanders?
Oh my gosh.
I think it was fifth.
Yeah, I think so.
And it almost felt like if the Browns didn't take him, he may have gone undrafted. It is crazy. But him getting a chance to play in the opening preseason game, this is a freaking good thing. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, we're not doing the show. We're just going to watch a game. It's going to be the first time in Cofield and Company history that we're going to be fixated on a game so much that we're just going to do play-by-play.
It sounds good.
How about that? Get on down here to Treasure Island. So many cool things. So many cool places to hang out. Gilly's is great. The Cove, which has now been open for about a year. Bar and Arcade. They've got a full-service bar. 25-plus exciting games. 19 TVs. You got activities like shuffleboard, duck pin bowling, golf simulator. Are you an air hockey person? That's a no. If you immediately didn't jump on it and be like, I'll kick your ass. Griffin, are you an air hockey person?
I'll kick both your asses at the ice hockey. Absolutely.
Well, the air hockey. I didn't say ice hockey. I'm not playing ice hockey. I can't skate. When I have, it's a disaster. So, well, you're a big fellow with the fast reflexes, so you must have had the good hands at defensive end, so I trust you. But, yeah, nearly 8,000 square feet, a hub of entertainment and fun. It's right by the Mystere Theater. It's the Cove, bar and arcade. All right, so, oh, my God. Shedeur Sanders, he just took a snap. We're not doing this. Last night, I was fascinated by the intensity of the Seattle crowd and the Seattle team for a preseason game.
Was that a Pete Carroll and Geno Smith return?
I guess. I didn't anticipate it.
I know.
One of my buddies does radio in the mornings on KJR, Chuck Powell. And I talked to him a little bit about the game coming up. And he actually said, this year's different in sports media there and on his show. Because normally at this time of the year, the Seahawks have taken over every show. And he said, because the Mariners are so good, he's like, it's actually Mariners right now kind of getting 70%, 80% of the airplay. And they did hit on the Seahawks, and they hit on the angle one, Pete Carroll's return. There was a little controversy as to whether the Seahawks were going to have a video pregame tribute to him, and they didn't do that. They just kind of showed him on the big screen. I don't think Seahawks fans are bitter with Pete Carroll. The Seahawks are basically the ones who told him to buzz off, and then he retired or whatever he did. But they don't like Geno Smith. At least some of them don't.
I know. Which is shocking. I don't understand why. I mean, traded Russell Wilson, he stepped in and did great.
Well, Griffin?
Yeah.
Man, they go out and they sign a shiny new toy in Sam Darnold, and I guess all of a sudden they wanted to write off Geno Smith too.
I know, but why would they be mad at him? He didn't agree to a contract extension, but I think that was more behind the scenes, and it wasn't played out publicly like, screw these guys. And I don't think he was dealt because he didn't want to sign the extension. But, yeah, last night I guess fans were getting all over him, and then we are getting pictures today of Geno Smith turning to the crowd on the run out from the tunnel, and he's flipping the bird, double bird.
I thought Geno was a little more calm and collected than that. But
not this offseason.
I don't know. Yeah. I think he's got some fire in him.
Yeah.
I like it. And, I mean, hey, could this also be about, the whole tribute video gate we've been talking about all week with, Seattle may have created some for Pete Carroll, having him come back to Seattle. Maybe they didn't, and then it turns out they didn't. Maybe there's, rumblings about that in the Raiders locker room, and Geno Smith just said, they're going to come out negative. They're going to come negatively at my coach and at me. We're going to come right back because this is the new Raiders, because we're going to bring that nasty Raiders mentality back. That's how I took it.
Maybe. I think Pete Carroll would have to talk about it, and I don't see Pete talking about it, but who knows? Maybe that was part of the pregame speech where Pete's like, these guys are mistreating me. Let's go out and kick them in the teeth. But the great thing on the Geno Smith double bird, which, by the way, he'll be fine for, was Max Crosby followed him, and Max was doing it. So now they're both going to be fine. And Max Crosby Productions, whatever it's called, his podcast, they're the ones who put out the subsequent video of Max coming out with the finger. So it's like, I wonder if Max is like, guys, come on. I did it in the stadium, but you're getting me fined here. Or Max was like, do it.
Do it before anybody else does. Let's beat him to it.
That, and also, hey, you know what? I'm with Geno. I have his back, and they're trying to set a culture. So it's very Raider-like in terms of historic Raider stuff. You're out for a preseason game at the beginning of the game, and two of the players are giving the opposing crowd in a preseason game the finger.
Hey, man, all we need next is for a designated spot at Allegiant Stadium for the new and improved black hole for the Raiders. We really could get a culture here going.
Well, dare I say it, if the majority of the fans in the black hole, I'm going to say would show up, but I really mean could show up, because I think they've been priced out of the building in some ways. If the crowd was bigger at Allegiant, but filled with, let me restate it, if it was filled with more of the black hole fans, it would be a better environment. Because you saw last night, Seattle was crazy for a preseason game, and I don't know how many games as a Raiders or as a football fan have you gone to see the Raiders at Allegiant?
Two.
It's a decent environment, but the black hole is not like it used to be.
Yeah, no.
And it's pretty docile.
Yeah,
it could but I think a lot of it is that they've been priced out, sadly.
Well, watching that game last night, I was thinking about that. Like, this does not look like a preseason game I watched here in Allegiant last year at all.
It is one of the biggest missions of Pete Carroll and the organization. The biggest thing is win, but they have got to find a way to shut out more of the opposing fans and get more of the hardcore Raider fans in there to make it just an animalistic atmosphere at these games.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Well, I can already see what the narrative is going to be after the first two series with Shedeur Sanders. Heavy pass rush consistently by the Panthers. Shedeur had him on the move. Browns are playing Carolina in the biggest preseason game in the history of the NFL. A lot of viewers, a lot of hype, a lot of excuses already being made. A bunch of dorks saying he's being set up to fail. He just, on third down on a scramble, overthrew a receiver. But he did deliver a good pass just now over the middle. He got the offense moving on a screen play, running back out of the backfield. So, he looks comfortable.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
So, There's going to be a big split, and there'll be a hardcore football breakdown, which, by the way, we have to get to later on. I thought some of the breakdowns last night of Anthony Richardson and the play he got hurt on were excellent, and that's why you have former football players on, especially if they're the good part of the jockocracy and they've been trained and they're eloquent and pass on the message. Many of them are morons and can't, but that's why you want them on, because they play the game and they can break down plays. Let's go out to L.A. and get a report on what's going on with the Chargers and the Rams, but also a lot of big series in baseball. As I'm sorry, I'm watching Shador scramble back about 30 yards and almost lose about 25. Grant Mohn is in from the Sporting Tribune. Sorry, Grant. We got Shador Sanders preseason game. This is the most important thing we've ever seen in football.
Yeah, sorry if I'm interrupting anything.
Because, I know, right?
Listen, I'm interested too. I'm a football guy as well, so I'm following along as you guys are talking. So you can keep me updated as we talk.
This will be the breakdown of this will be a battle next week between, was it the pass rush that had Shador running all over the field, or was he reacting too slowly, which is always a really interesting debate with quarterbacks. Tonight is something really cool going on at the Dodgers game, and Alex was just saying she had seen the get-in price on average for the Dodgers game at only $115. Now, those seats could be crap, but here's the thing. For a collectible like a Kobe Bryant Dodgers bobblehead, I can see why there's such energy to get into this game.
Yeah, you know, 115 is actually kind of low. I mean, for some of the Shohei bobbleheads, we've seen it like 175, 200. And basically, you're sitting up there with God at the top of Dodger Stadium, the top deck, the reserve row. So you're not going to get a good seat, but you are going to get that collector's bobblehead. And I got to give the Dodgers credit. Like, they have some really, really good giveaways. Like, they've been bobblehead crazy this season. So this Kobe Bryant one's really cool. Obviously, people in Los Angeles are going to flock to this game. They flock to every Dodger game, especially when there's a bobblehead. But a Kobe Bryant one, you're going to expect probably 50 to 60,000 people there. Even if the capacity says 55,000, it feels like there's some standing room there too. But the Dodgers guys have some of their own issues right now on the field. It's not necessarily what's going on with the fans. 8-10 in their last 18. Their offense has been stagnant at times. I thought that Max Muncy returning and coming back for a few games and looking like a power threat in their lineup would turn things around, and then they go ahead and lose the last game of the Cardinals series, and it looks like the sky's fallen again. So it doesn't get easier. They're playing a Blue Jays team that's at the top of the AL East and looking like one of the best teams in baseball, which is something that I did not expect to say early in August. But they have their work cut out for them is my main point here.
I think you said it perfect. Really, their offense has been stagnant for quite some time. I mean, Freeman really trying to get them going here, but it's getting late now. We're in August, and you're right. Now they're up against the Blue Jays. I think it's going to be a tough pitching matchup. Tonight's really cool, though. Two future Hall of Famers, Scherzer and then Clayton Kershaw on the other side. What do you expect down this series, like with the starters going head-to-head?
Yeah, it's fortunate for the Dodgers that they have Clayton Kershaw, who's actually been 3.29 this year with his ERA, which has actually been pretty decent. The fact that he's throwing 88 miles an hour and has a 3.29 ERA is pretty impressive, especially at his age. But you know, then they have Blake Snell going in Game 2, Yamamoto Game 3. But they're facing a Blue Jays team, like I said, is really, really good. And their pitching staff's been really good. So it doesn't get any easier for this Dodgers team. You know, Freddie Freeman, you know, like you mentioned, he's been doing very, very well over the past few weeks. I think the whole slump that the team has been in, there's been a few guys that have, you know, broken out of it a little bit. I think Teoscar Hernandez has broken out a little bit. Will Smith has been great all season. I don't think anyone has to worry about Will Smith at this point, but I think it's all the other guys. You know, I know Shaq likes to coin that term. It's like the others, but it's true here with the Dodgers. Like, those guys matter more than any other player, I feel like, because Shohei's having another MVP season. Like, Freddie's doing what he's doing. Mookie Betts is like the one guy that I'm still kind of concerned about. He's been playing actually above average defense at shortstop. Like, he converted to shortstop yet again this season. And yeah, he hasn't been the best shortstop in the league, but he's, I think, six runs, defensive runs saved in the MLB, which is like up there amongst the best among shortstops. So it hasn't been that bad there, but the offense is, he's having the worst year of his career offensively. And the Dodgers, if they're going to make any noise, especially, and I keep saying this every time I come on here, with the Padres breathing down their neck in the NL West, I mean, now they're like two games out. and the Padres are playing excellent baseball. You need your superstars to perform, and that is the main reason why they didn't go out and make significant moves at the deadline, because they trust in their stars, and they trust in Mookie Betts to get it together, and he just hasn't yet.
And the Padres definitely went out and made some big moves to try and compete with them in this division. What do you expect from Shohei Ohtani moving forward? Are they going to keep stretching him and keep him starting games here pitching as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the plan for Shohei right now is just get him as ready as possible to be a game one of the playoff starter. I feel like his stuff in his last outing, which is probably the best outing we've seen from Shohei in quite some time. Obviously, he's been out with the arm injury for a while, but he went past, you know, he went through four innings, but the stuff that he had, it was 98-99 with wipeout breaking stuff. He had 8 Ks in four innings. Like, that's unbelievable. That's like some of the best pitching in the league, and he has been one of the better pitchers in the league. I mean, I'm not just saying that with a bias because I'm the West Coast and I'm in LA. Like, he has been one of the best pitchers in baseball since he came back. And I know it's a small sample size. He's not pitching 5-6 innings like some of the other pitchers. But his ability to get his 1,000th hit on a home run and also go four innings of unbelievable pitching on the mound, that's unicorn stuff. That's why the Dodgers signed him to $700 million. So he's been phenomenal.
G Mona 48 up on Twitter, thesportingtribune.com. It's Grant Mona, host of Sporting Tribune Live, that's on Sunday through Thursday. I mean, what a freaking disaster in Chargers camp. Rashawn Slater, starting left tackle, just signed a new massive deal, goes down with an injury, he's out for the year. So now Joe Alt to the left side, and then the right side, I'm Trey Pipkins over the years. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it seems like the Chargers are just snake bitten. They just can't stay healthy, and it's Najee Harris now. It's Rashawn Slater. It's guys that are really critical to the team. It's not just players that, oh, you can lose him. No, like Rashawn Slater is one of the best in the league. They just extended him. They gave him a big contract. So these are guys that Justin Herbert needs, that Jim Harbaugh needs. Najee Harris, I don't know what's going on with him. Like, he has an eye issue. He can't even open his eye yet. And he's one of their big offseason signings. They retained Khalil Mack, and that's pretty big for them. But I just don't know if they have the talent to beat Denver or beat Kansas City. Like, I think that Denver's a better football team than them right now. I think that Kansas City is as well. And in an AFC West that you'll see the Raiders be better, like, I just think that they're just going to be better by aggregate. Like, you're going to have Pete Carroll, they're going to have Geno Smith, and they're just going to be a better football team. I don't know where the Chargers stand without one of their best linemen who is going to protect Herbert, who I felt could have an MVP year if he was healthy. So I am concerned now about the Chargers. I thought that they would be a playoff team, but again, I don't know. People don't understand how big offensive line play is in the National Football League in 2025. It's a big reason why the Eagles won the championship. They're awesome on the trenches. The Rams are dealing with their own issues. Like, Alaric Jackson has a blood clot. We don't know if he's going to be back. He's going to be the guy that's defending Matthew Stafford's blind side. So it's the same thing with Slater. Like, you need these guys to make deep runs in the playoffs. And I just feel devastated for him because he's a hard worker, just got his contract extension, and he's one of the best linemen in the league, and you're going to miss that for a whole year.
We got less than 2 minutes, so let's go rapid fire on a couple of basketball topics. One, Austin Reeves and the Lakers and long-term future.
Yeah, you know, there's reporting coming out from ESPN that he's expected to re-sign. I think that was the expectations whole time. I don't think that he was going to leave. But the number was the part that I think a lot of people were a little bit taken back by. Like, $30 million a year for a guy that doesn't play defense, for a guy that, you know, he had his issues in the playoffs in the first round. I've talked to Laker fans. They're not thrilled about the $30 million, but they do understand the offensive impact that he has next to Luka Doncic. Again, I think he's best suited with the ball in his hands, but with Luka there, with LeBron there, is he going to get the ball a lot? Is he going to get the ability to be a point guard? I don't think so. So I know that he's expected to re-sign, but what is his role? Is he really a $30 million guy next to Luka Doncic? That's the big question. And at this point, I need to see him this year within the system for a full year with Luka to kind of understand that.
Grant, 20 seconds. Sparks are playing good basketball, and it, you know, comes at the same time as Cam Brink's return, doing a good job on defense.
oh, she's amazing, you know, defensive player of the year type stuff. She transformed that whole defense. But their offense, I mean, their offense has scored 100 points in like 7 of 8 games or 5 of 6 games, something like that. Their offense has been amazing too. So the Sparks are on a roll. I think they can get a playoff spot this year, like our friend Willie Ramirez said to me before the season.
If they get a playoff spot and the Aces don't, look out. That's a whole lot of trouble here in Las Vegas if the Sparks pass them this year, and they might do it. You're right. All right, Grant, have a good weekend.
All right, appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on.
There is Grant Mona, the Sporting Tribune, at GMona48. Panthers and Browns. Browns drive sputtered out, and the Panthers are on the move. Tet McMillan with, I think it was a 29-yard catch, and Bryce Young is out there. Panthers looking pretty good. Early on, it's all Shadur's fault.
Live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Touchdown Panthers. Bryce Young in the game. 7-0 Panthers on top. I was kidding before I went to break. Nothing is Shadur Sanders' fault. But the Browns are down 7-0. He's had a couple of series. Made some nice plays. Also getting some pretty heavy pass rush. I'd say not getting the ball out quickly enough either. So we'll continue to update that preseason game. Chuck Esposito from STN is going to join us in a couple of minutes. We'll get his report on what the action was like tonight around the NFL and what it looks like tomorrow, and a couple of baseball points. An update here on what's been going on with the WNBA and these fake green wieners they've been throwing on the floor. It happened again. Sky Dream Game. Two were thrown near the court. Only one made it onto the floor. Funny enough, someone tweeting this said the color is unclear. Like, we're doing like hardcore reporting on this. I want to go back and play a bite that we had yesterday, and I want to get Alex's reaction on this. I think there's a lot more to the story that may not be as, say, misogynistic as we think, but Chris Patola, who does SiriusXM, got real hard into this and was like, hey, this is really insulting to women, and it says a lot about men in our society.
Look, I have a sense of humor as much as anybody. Throwing those onto a floor at a WNBA game, it's still a manifestation of who we are in terms of treatment of women. We are still at a point in our social evolution, in our cultural evolution, of putting women in their place.
Okay, Alex, have you taken it that way, or is this something to laugh at? I mean, it's not stopping. The other thing is the WNBA is always weird in cases like this. It seems like it takes them 2 weeks to kind of get their crap together. How about come out with a statement? And also, part of that should be, like, not only expulsion, but a really strong statement, like, do this, and you're, I mean, I know people are going to laugh, right, when I say this, like, you're never coming to a WNBA game again. It's like, oh, no one wants to go. People want to go. They clearly went. How do you take this?
Oh, I didn't really take it the way he just put it until hearing it. I mean, that is, they wouldn't do that at an NBA game, right? I mean, but kind
it's
of.
It's happened a few times at an NFL game it happened. But now, I mean, it's like 6 times.
To your point, I think it's more on the league and how they've been dragging their feet to get it resolved and putting out a statement and stopping it. So
it's really oftentimes when you need an answer on something in the WNBA, even as dumb as this, it is a rudderless ship. Now, here's the backstory. I read this morning, like, some crypto group was taking credit for it. This is one explanation, that there's a group of enthusiasts and traders that launched a green dildo coin. A meme coin intended to be lighthearted and perceived as a joke late in July to protest what they described as a toxic environment in that world. I guess according to a spokesman, this group has a spokesperson, telling USA Today, many of the smaller players in the space are struggling to keep up with the influx of influencers and scammers, but I don't really get the tie to the NBA, WNBA, aside from they've called it, it's a prank. So are you telling me the 18-year-old who got arrested, I think his name is like Jaden Lopez in Phoenix, he's part of the crypto community, or he's a copycat? Like, what is going on here?
I don't know. It's very, very confusing.
It's incredibly stupid. And yet, the WNBA can't stop it. So, another weird failing to clamp down on a lot of the nastiness around that league. So, I'm going to get sort of an answer to this question in about 25 minutes. I'm very amped up about the Kobe bobblehead that's happening tonight. They're giving it away at the Dodgers game. I don't know if you got a look at it. You take a look during the break. It is really cool. So it's Kobe Bryant, and he actually does have a bat in his hand. I mean, this is a great collectible. And the Dodgers just get it. Like, their giveaways are crazy, and they create this frenzy, especially the Shohei Ohtani bobbleheads. I just texted someone because I think this would be a very coveted gift for someone in my life. I just texted someone $200 for the – I'm asking, $200 for the Kobe bobblehead. Do you think they'll do it?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
I 100% think they will say, absolutely not, I will not sell this.
It's Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. We kind of jobbed you on this one. Your broadcast position, Alex. You don't have a great view of all the TVs here. You have been fixated on Yankees and Astros.
AL Showdown, yep.
Which is a big series, and we know it's a heated rivalry because the Astros, massive cheats. Yankees did it too, and so did Red Sox, but Astros got caught. What are we seeing so far in this game?
Well, Hunter Brown is on the mound, who has been fantastic for the Astros, so up 2-0 right now. But, I mean, the Yankees finally got Aaron Judge back. They got to turn it around here soon.
Yeah, I want to talk about Judge in a couple minutes with Matt Neverett, Voice of Baseball here in Vegas. We'll speak to Matt in about 15, 20 minutes. Yeah, Brown has been a big surprise. The Astros actually got swept at the beginning of the week by the Red Sox. I think the Red Sox are an incredible story. I don't know how this is happening.
I don't either. And I'm curious if they can sustain it or if we're going to see a drop-off here shortly. But I don't know. I mean, they're playing great baseball.
Imagine if Dustin May, whose debut was kind of crappy, what if he can actually get it together down the stretch here and, you know, give him ace stuff?
Yeah. Which we have seen it, so.
It's a weird vibe, man, in Boston. This is something we addressed a couple weeks ago about their GM is not very liked around baseball. He's weird in the way he talks about his team. He's odd in the way he discussed the trade deadline. Let's get to a little baseball, but let's focus on some of the preseason football. It's Chuck Esposito, STN, is going to join us in just a little bit. On the football, Browns just were the beneficiaries of a muffed punt. They got stymied at midfield. The third down play by Shedeur Sanders, he was throwing into a tight coverage on the sideline, but the pass was so off, and it's the second pass I've seen, and I haven't been able to watch every pass. He's 5-10 so far, but it was the second pass I've seen that was just awful. They're on the five. They're set up. Shedeur just threw into the end zone. I think he got a touchdown.
Yes, he did.
How about that? We'll watch the replay. Lots of 12 jerseys. That's his number.
A lot of 12 jerseys.
All right, so first touchdown of his career. It's a preseason touchdown, but still. Shedeur with a mild celebration. And, yes, I'm doing play-by-play of preseason football, but people are so hyped for this. Yeah, good protection. Receiver coming across the field. And he actually threw between a couple of defenders. That's a good pass.
Yes.
That was really well placed. That's good. Ah, they're setting him up to fail. I'm telling you, it's going to work out for the kid. I don't know if he's ever a starting quarterback in the National Football League, but it's the preseason. He's getting a chance. He showed well there. And, you know, not to throw out cliches, but, you know, nothing does wonders for your professional football career, like actually getting in games and getting game experience. So that was cool. Bryce Young is playing, and he threw a touchdown pass earlier. We mentioned Ted McMillan, who's a top 10 pick receiver out of Arizona. He had a nice catch on about a 29 or 30 yarder or so. 7-7 game just into the second quarter. The Commies game is going to start up here. Actually, no, it's already started about 10 minutes ago. You got any count on that one?
I've got New England 7-0. Is that what you're talking about, the score?
Yep. About 5 minutes in. Count, score.
There we go.
I speak in code.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were talking betting.
No.
For me, so.
Actually, the score was on a kickoff return. It was the opener of the game. Trevion Henderson, 100 yards. So there's been some talk about Henderson being the guy over hometown hero running back for the Patriots. 7-0 early in that one. And then the other game is Detroit and Atlanta. Second quarter, 3-0. Are you playing preseason games?
I have not played any preseason games.
You didn't go with the approach of, let me play every game under.
No, thank goodness. Game went over yesterday. And dogs are barking. The pros, wherever they're betting, and the steam's coming in, and it's not really working out for them. So
I don't see how anyone can bet favorites in the preseason.
I know.
What are you basing it on? Just, you know, I think a lot of people are looking at the, as we mentioned an hour ago, you know, it's key who's going to play quarterback. But if you're taking reports of, oh, starters are going to play without having a snitch on the coaching staff, what does that mean? Starters going to play a series, two series, a quarter, a half? That doesn't – someone saying starters are going to play or they're available doesn't give you anything on a handicap if you don't know how many plays they're going to be out there for.
Well, wasn't it Adam Hill on your show and said that, you know, Steve Carroll said everybody's live? But that's it. I mean, it was very wide open, and then everybody started freaking out and saying all the Raiders starters are playing, and Geno didn't play for very long at all. So it's tough. And then the Colts and Ravens yesterday, I mean, I had somebody come on and say, do you trust Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson to split snaps, or do you trust the Ravens' second-string defense? Because I'll take the points with the Ravens, and, yeah, they won outright. So it's very tough. I like betting, but not that much that I need to jump in on preseason.
On South Point Studios, on your show, and I'm blanking on the name of the show, I apologize.
Sports by the Book.
Yeah, Sports by the Book. By the way, I say this to you as much as I can. You guys are doing a kick-ass job on social media. Really good pushing out videos on Instagram and TikTok. On Sports by the Book, between you and Jeff Parles, what's been the opinion, I don't know if it's a consensus, on the Colts? And did you hit it today with Richardson going down, which I don't think is going to be lengthy, but it certainly puts him behind the eight ball in the battle and getting ready for the season.
Definitely puts him behind for the battle. We've actually been busy the last couple of weeks. We're putting out previews for every single team, all 32 teams. We've got about 9 left, so we already did the Colts and where we both were. I think we're both kind of in the same boat, finishing right there, like third in the division. So not very high on them. Unless I personally think if Daniel Jones can kind of be like a Baker Mayfield and just like have a rebuild, a start over here in Indianapolis, and it turns out well. But I don't really see Anthony Richardson leading this team this year. So I don't know. It's tough.
Did you watch the play? Did you see the play?
No, I didn't. I watched a little bit of the other two games. I didn't see any of that one.
Griffin, did you see the play where Richardson got blown up and had his finger dislocated?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yes, I did. And, you know, I definitely have some thoughts about, you know, a quarterback who's in year three who can't really tell where the blitz is coming from, which side it's coming from, unable to adjust his protection. You know, and again, that's just all speculation from what I saw. But what it looked like to me was just, yeah, the man just doesn't really seem to have that pre-snap adjustments and everything down quite yet. Not saying he can't start, not saying he can't be, you know, the starter once the regular season goes. But come on, man. Come on, year three. It's getting chop-chop.
Yeah. Well, I don't overreact to it and say he's not prepared, he's not getting into year three based on one play. But on that play, and, you know, I was mentioning earlier about the jockocracy, and, you know, we like having athletes on the show, former athletes, and I think they can make really good radio and TV hosts if they actually study and if they can deliver the message. And I saw some really good breakdown of this, and I'll shout out one guy Jeff Schwartz, who does a good job, former O-lineman in the NFL. I thought his explanation of what happened on that play was pretty simple and easy to digest. So Richardson's out there, and the pressure comes from his right. And the way Schwartz broke it down, he said this play is designed against this defense when they've got three defenders on the right side. They only got two blockers. And so the blockers are going to take care of these two guys. So Richardson should know who's going to break free. Now, here was a great thing on the play, because you see it and you're like, holy crap, he got destroyed, right? Well, if you watched, there is a running back leaking out to the right. There is a wide receiver wide open in the flat. You need to, I'm sure Griffin knows this, you need to throw into the pressure because that guy is vacating an area, and they actually had two wide open receivers. But the problem is, for some reason, Richardson took the snap and was so fixated on looking to the left that he never saw the defender. Meanwhile, if he had done what he's supposed to do,
right,
recognized that it was three versus two on the right side, he's got two receivers. And I'm telling you, the wide receiver, if he had gotten it, would have gained probably 12 yards. If the running back got it and the wide receiver had blocked well, there was a chance to make it into a minimum 10-yard gain, if not 15 or 20. But Richardson, Griffin, just never recognized what was going on to his right side.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the play, and it looked like the Seattle Seahawks, or it looked like the defense, they had a corner that looked like he was going to blitz on the left side of the line. And then once the ball was snapped, they had it covered.
You're right. When what did the cornerback do? Did he drop back?
Yeah, he dropped back. And then on the right side is where the blitz actually came from, and that's where he had the open running back, the open receiver. But you're right. He was strictly looking to his left, and he never even took a chance to look at his right and see what he had. I mean, obviously, he had a linebacker in his face.
Yeah, and then as a result, he gets destroyed. He dislocates his finger, and I mean, he's not going to get the starting job now. Not that that's the kind of thing you can't tape up and play decently with, but it's on his throwing hand. I think they're probably engaged in a battle where Jones was slightly ahead. Now, here's the crazy thing with the Colts. They actually have talent. I mean, they have a great running back. They have a great running game.
Yeah.
But Daniel Jones and that resurgence you're talking about, right? Maybe Shane Steichen is a quarterback whisperer, and it just hasn't worked with Anthony Richardson, right? I don't know if Steichen is as good as Kevin O'Connell. In fact, right now he's not. He doesn't have the resume of O'Connell. But Jones is intriguing. A bunch of teams wanted him. The problem with Daniel Jones is part of his game is that he is fleet of foot and he will get out of the pocket, but he's been brittle.
Yes.
So for Colts fans, like, how much hope can you have that, well, you know what, Richardson may not work out, but we've got Danny Dimes and he could be a Sam Darnold. He could be a Baker Mayfield, but he never stays healthy.
No.
So this could be the kind of year where Jones gets the nod and then gets freaking hurt, and then Richardson has to go in there, and then maybe Jones plays again. So I'll tell you what, the Colts are one of those teams that when Archie Manning said the other day that his grandson Arch is not likely to leave Texas after the season, that's going to bust them up, because they're definitely one of the teams in the mix that has got to get some kind of solution here at the quarterback, because the longer this goes, it just does not look like Anthony Richardson is going to work himself into a viable starting quarterback.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that was such a risk. He's barely played any games, so we'll see. But yeah, when it's accuracy and everything with the throwing arm, and then that's the injury that really hurts him as well. Position by position, what about the Titans? Because you said the Colts do have a lot of talent.
You like the Titans?
I'm way more intrigued with the Titans right now, because statistically their defense was really good last year in yards per play, but they gave up so many points because they were put in such bad field position over and over with turnovers.
4 o'clock hour brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number to call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. In Reno and Sparks, there is an office. Just dial 775-766-1400.